Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I want to begin this hour by thanking everybody who pledged last hour. I'm really gratified, I have to say, by the amount of support we got last hour during a very heavy couple of conversations with John Negroponte and Michael Scheuer. And, you know, I guess public broadcasters could make the decision that when you're doing a fundraiser, a pledge week, that you just put on the three tenors and stuff like that all week. But we don't do that. And so when we talked to Michael Scheuer about, you know, how we're vulnerable in the war on terror, et cetera, and John Negroponte about some of that related tough stuff, you showed up. And that is really extremely gratifying to me. So that's great that you are there with your financial support for the kind of stuff that we consider at the heart of our mission. And, of course, our phones and our web address are still available for your pledges here on the third to last day of our winter membership drive at WNYC.org or 1-888-376-9692. Thanks so much for supporting the station. Now, here's a little glimpse behind the scenes. There's a type of segment that we do on the show that we refer to in the office as a shamu. It's a reference, really, to the 2006 New York Times article, What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. That article turned out to be the most emailed Times article of the year and reflects one of the things that we're interested in here, too. Issues not just in the political realm, but in the personal and cultural realms as well, like about why it became such a cultural hit when author Amy Sutherland compared her relationship with her husband to her relationship with a trained whale at SeaWorld. So our Shamu segments are those that relate our personal lives to who we are as a culture. And now Amy Sutherland is out with a book-length version of her hit article. It's called What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage, Lessons for People from Animals and Their Trainers. Amy Sutherland, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
And to put this in context, this is the opposite of your first book, which was about actual animal training.
Right. Yeah, it's sort of the opposite, but they're interlinked.
Sure.
Because this book wouldn't have been possible without the
right.
First one.
Because that book was about actual animal training, and then the one essay about training your husband broke out as such a hit
right.
That I guess you flipped the scene and the publisher came knocking at your door and you wrote a whole book about human relationships.
Right, yeah. I mean, people were always asked if I was surprised at how well that Colin did, how popular it became. And the thing is yes, I was surprised, but the original surprise was that the book about the animal training school, the previous book, would have such a personal effect on me. I mean, I'm a journalist. I just went to...
You're not an animal trainer.
Right. And I went to just hang out with this great subject of this top school for exotic animal trainers, and I left a year later personally transformed by that experience.
So remind our listeners, or for those who haven't read your article, how did you first apply animal training techniques to your marriage?
Well, so I was following students at the top school for exotic animal trainers for my previous book, Kick, Bitten, and Scratched. And so it's just, I was following them as they learned the principles and then as they applied them on actual animals, you know, hyena, baboons, water buffaloes, you name it. They had everything. And it just really started to dawn on me that what they learned were these fundamental principles, behavioral principles that they were applying to all species. So why wouldn't it work on the species Homo sapiens and specifically American husband, mine at home? So, you know, I just started trying to unravel some of our or sort of solve some of our behavior problems between me and my husband using the way the animal trainers would think.
Give me one example.
Well, the prime example, I mean, the really prime example, the really sort of aha moment is that when animal trainers work with an animal and the animal does something they don't like, they will ignore it. Because the idea is that any attention can fuel that behavior you don't like. So they even have a term for it. They call it the least reinforcing scenario because marine mammal trainers like to have names for everything.
Chapter 8 of your book, the least reinforcing scenario.
Yeah. So my husband loses things all the time, primarily his keys and his wallet. And when he does this, it would really, you know, frustrate him. And there would be a lot of stomping around and heavy sighing and all that. And I had always tried to help. And if I didn't help, I would, you know, offer suggestions of how this wouldn't happen in the future. But what the point was, I was always engaging. So this least reinforcing scenario, which I heard about at SeaWorld, made me think, like, why not try one of those and not respond? And that's what I did the next time my husband was huffing, puffing over keys. And it's not that he didn't huff and puff, but it, like, ended so quickly.
Were you trying to get him to not lose his keys in his wallet or to not be so upset about it?
To not be so upset about it. That's the trick. I mean, that's the point of it, is that that's what I had picked. I mean, the man still loses his keys. Uh-huh. That's like, you know, as I said in the column, as a badger will always dig, my husband will forever lose his wallet. I mean, it's almost like instinctive behavior on his part. But
Or you're right. Your husband will never stop losing his wallet and keys. And as geese migrate, so will my husband spend a chunk of each July before the TV watching the Tour de France. You don't want to stop him from watching the bicycle race, do you?
No. But, you know, that the TV is on for a long time during the Tour de France, so I can get a little tired of listening to Phil Liggett. But nothing against Phil Liggett, but, you know, it's just that's the thing is with the animal trainers that was really interesting to me is that they pick, you know, exactly what they're trying to change, and they think very specifically. So in that case, I was trying to not have his temper get out of control.
So, all right, listeners, have you trained your partner or other loved one, or has anyone trained you, or have you rebelled against the training? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692 to talk to Amy Sutherland. You told me off the air that the word shamu has actually become a verb in your house.
Right. Yeah, we talk about to shamu as in can you shamu that, meaning can you use the principles of animal behavior to solve a behavioral problem. Both my husband and I currently teach writing.
Do you have kids?
No, we don't have kids, but we do have students. And they can use some shamooing sometimes. And so we just use it as shorthand for that. And we even, you know, sometimes say to each other, did you just shamoo me? When, because he uses it on me, too.
So do you have this kind of defensive relationship now where you're each kind of, you know, you're always on the lookout for when you're being shamooed by the other one?
Actually, no, because, you know, the one of the beautiful things about this is that this is progressive animal training. So it's using positive methods. So it's really a nicer way of doing business and a nicer way of interacting with people. And so it's preferable. I mean, we had an example recently where I had a longstanding cold I couldn't get rid of in the day. I got rid of it. My computer crashed. So I was not in a very good frame of mind. And I had a big whiny episode. And my husband shamooed me and just didn't respond. And I, you know, but I still got to sort of whine for a little bit, but I didn't whine for as long as I normally would. And later I thought to myself, oh, he just shamooed me. But, you know, it's nicer than what he used to do in the past was he used to offer suggestions as to what I should do to solve my problem when all I wanted to do was whine. You know, when you want to whine, that's all you want to do.
Gosh, so. I thought problem solving was a good thing.
Not always.
But yeah, sometimes you want to whine.
Yeah.
Sarah in Highland Park, you're on WNYC with Amy Sutherland. Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to let you know that I am a cognitive behavior therapist.
Yay.
In Piscataway, yeah. And I actually give that article out to my clients, especially to parents or loved ones who are reinforcing certain behaviors. Particularly, I work with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, a lot. And some of the reassurance seeking that people do, they get a lot of reinforcement from loved ones. And your article really helps people to kind of understand sort of in a lighthearted way how what they're doing isn't helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. I look forward to your book.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much. So to judge from the evolution of the titles of your article and your book, you originally applied Shamu's lessons to marriage, and Shamu, of course, is the whale.
Yeah, right. Seaward,
in case we haven't made that clear, right? From what Shamu taught me about a happy marriage to now the book, what Shamu taught me about life, love, and marriage, lessons for people from animals and their trainers. So does this go beyond marriage now?
Yeah. I mean, this can work with anybody, your relatives, your coworkers, your friends. It goes across every relationship. I personally started this with my husband first because I'm a stay-at-home writer. I work on my own. I don't have actually enough human-animal interaction these days, so I didn't have a lot of people to practice on it first. But when it works so well with my husband, I just sort of adopted it as a way to just think about relationships.
Let's go over some of the other techniques in the books, because you talked about the least reinforcing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and that's one thing. So you have use incompatible behaviors, know your species, don't act like a prey animal around a predator. Pick one of those and tell me how it applies to a human being.
Well, the know your species, most of what I talk about is based on the school of human psychology. Animal trainers use what's called behaviorism. That's the human psychology form of it. And they took those principles and used it on animals. Know your species is more something that is specific just to animal trainers. It doesn't really have anything to do with human psychology, but I borrowed it. And that is that good animal trainers learn everything about the animal that they're working with, from things about its species to its individual personality, things it likes, doesn't like. And for example, like it matters to an animal trainer that an elephant can't jump physiologically, but it can stand up on its back legs. Mm-hmm. So if you try to train it to jump, you're really wasting your time. So for me, the way I applied it was to sort of look at humans that way and to really think about them as individuals in the sense of how that might affect the behaviors they can do or can do more easily than others. And it also is a way, you know, for part of this for me is that it's kind of just a fun way to think about human behavior. I mean, it's sort of a crack up, but it helps to have it be funny.
Well, we will continue with this crack up and take more of your calls for Amy Sutherland, author of What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage, Lessons for People from Animals and Their Trainers. Do you shamu anybody? Does anybody shamu you? Do you rebel against somebody trying to shamu you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, thanks again for your contributions, and we continue now with Amy Sutherland, author of What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. The most viewed and emailed article of the New York Times online world in 2006. And now the book, What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage, Lessons for People from Animals and Their Trainers. And Amy, we have a relatively short amount of time and a whole lot of people calling you up. So let's take some phone calls, okay? How about this caller wants to be anonymous from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
Big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I have twin boys with autism, and I have used many of these things with them, actually, and we've done a great job with them. My question actually is, how do we deal with the people? You know, we have to sit down with our district every year. We do work out their IEPs, and they're the ones I have difficulties with. How do you use this at arm's length?
Now, can you get, while Amy is thinking about an answer, what when you say you've used some of these animal training techniques on your kids with autism, like what, and how does it help them?
Well, basically, you know, they call it applied behavior analysis, mm-hmm, when you deal, you know, with the children. And what it is you see, you ignore the bad behaviors, and you positively reinforce the things that you want from them. And so that's, you know, kind of how you do it. Of course, it's a lot more technical when they're doing it because they started when they were three and they did it in the school. And then they taught us how to do it at home. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's the same. And I just always thought about, it reminded me of Skinner and how they train, how he trained the animals and stuff like that.
So how do you shamu the bureaucracy is her question.
Yeah, that's tricky. And I have a friend in a similar situation and she has the same complaints that it's the officials she has to deal with that can be the hardest. You know, having not gone through that myself, I mean, if I were you, I would just try to use the same principle that you've used with your children, and that is to reinforce any behavior you like from them at all as much as you can, and ignore the behavior you don't like from them when you can. Now, that gets trickier because I know you have something at stake, but I know that parents in this situation suffer a lot of frustration.
And it's trickier with kids because if you just ignore something,
right,
very frequently they're just going to keep doing it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's not a blanket rule. It's a rule of thumb, essentially.
Yeah. Paul in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Brian and Ms. Sutherland. I was wondering if I was struck by the cognitive behavioral therapist giving the clipping to her patients to deal with other people. I'm wondering if you can use these techniques to deal with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thank you for bringing that up, because I keep meaning to make a point that I shamu myself all the time. And I do it primarily in that things that have bothered me about myself, like I tend to be late, and worse than that, I tend to rush places. And I used to just say to myself, that's it, no more rushing. And now, thinking more like an animal trainer, I break it down into smaller steps, what they would call approximations, what I call baby steps. But I don't sort of expect myself to change overnight the way I used to, because animal trainers would never expect a dolphin to suddenly do a flip.
Paul, thank you. And Shane in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was calling because my criticism of this is that when I first heard about this article and now the new book, I was really turned off to it, because it was kind of presented in a way of like, here's how I trained my husband the way you would an animal. And although that has like a comedic value to it, I think that it takes away from maybe some of the effective things. And I think that it might turn other people off to it. And also, I just wanted to say that I thought that it'd be interesting if a man had written this book and said that, oh, well, I trained my wife the way I would an animal. And what kind of a response would you get from that? Mm-hmm. And I think people would be a lot more upset about that.
Well, a couple points, you're not the first one to bring this up to me, is that the end of the column talks about how my husband uses this on me. And in the book, I talk about that more at length. And so this is not a gender-specific technique. It just so happens that I'm a woman, so I'm married to a man, and I used it on my husband. But it is something that is not unique to one gender over the other.
Right, but in our society, he's saying it might be taken as a misogynist, paternalistic thing if you had been Andy Sutherland.
That's true. I suppose, though, that you could have pulled it off just given the tone you took.
Paul, Shane, thanks for your call. In the book, you describe an interaction with one of your students who was very upset about something. She was weeping. There was drama. You write, I realized that even my reasoned response was too much attention. I announced as matter-of-factly as I could, it's due next week, gotta run. I swept up my stack of papers, grabbed my purse, and fled, unquote. So when does ignoring behavior you don't like morph into callousness or tread on that?
I don't know. I think, you know, ideally, well, I mean, you have to make these kinds of calls as you go along, just as an animal trainer would. I mean, you're just always responding to the situation at hand. But in that case, this was a student who had a habit of having hysterics, and the more attention she got, the more hysterical she got. So in some ways I was encouraging that behavior, and it was not productive to do that. So you could say that I was being callous actually by encouraging it, and that I might have been, you know, it might have been more helpful to her to do what I did.
And here's another real-life example in the name of practical application. Earlier this week, the website Jezebel.com hosted quite a robust discussion on several relationship books, yours included. And one person wrote, will someone please explain to me how to get him to stop leaving the bath mat on the floor? Don't nag. Okay, but what do I do instead? It said. So I guess the question that they're asking is, how do you positively reinforce behavior in absentia if the partner never picks up the bath mat?
You know, that's a really tough one, and that would be a problem for animal trainers, too. You can't reinforce something that you're not there to reinforce. And funny enough, I have that problem with my husband, my human-animal husband, too. I don't know what it is. It's mostly the two that he then steps on it in his big boots. But so that is a tricky one, and that, for me, falls in one of the categories of behaviors that I think are so instinctive and so hard to solve that I actually don't fuss about them anymore.
Mira in Oceanside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mira.
Hi, Brian. This is my very favorite topic.
Good.
I'm a positive reinforcement animal trainer.
Oh, wait, you're an actual animal trainer.
I am, for better or worse.
What animals do you primarily train?
primarily trained dogs,
but
I have branched out into the goat world and birds, and I've taken a stab with the fish. You know, if
you can train fish.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
You can train alligators.
Yes, anything that has a brain can be trained. My comment is I actually have two comments. The first one is, people get very uptight about the idea that we're training other humans when you apply these principles. For example, I have a young daughter, and my positive reinforcement for her, to train her to, you know, let's say, you know, let's not have temper tantrums today. I will make it a point to pick out behavior I do like and reward that. So if she's calm and playing, you know, nicely with a friend, I will make it a point to stop what I'm doing and mark that for her. And let's not forget that in humans, a positive, you know, reinforcer can be simply the word thank you. I don't carry around tiny bits of meat and give those to my daughter.
Right, or even a smile, right?
A smile, a hug, a thank you. The occasional stuffed dinosaur when she's been fabulous. So, you know, positive reinforcements in humans is different than it is in animals. It doesn't have to be a tactile thing. It's an appreciation. It's a thank you. Money is always helpful. dogs don't take credit cards, so we need to use
it. Right.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is the difference between reward, positive reinforcement, and bribery.
Absolutely.
It's a huge problem because, you know, thank you doesn't come before the act. When she does the behavior, I mark it, and I say thank you.
And we're almost out of time, but that's an interesting dilemma, that line between
And
reinforcement and bribery.
Right. In animal training, they would call it luring, basically holding the carrot out to get the animal to do something. And that's basically reinforcing before they've done it. You want to do it, you want to reinforce people why they're doing what you like, or just after, ideally.
Amy Sutherland now out with a book-length version of her hit newspaper article. It's called What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage, Lessons for People from Animals and Their Trainers. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Whoa, if I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be. If we could talk to the animals and learn their languages, maybe take an animal.